Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. C'est un grand plaisir de vous accueillir ici cet après-midi pour la 12e conférence de l'Université McGill sur le sujet des crises alimentaires mondiales. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome once again. Cette conférence suite la première qui a été organisée l'année passée, le dernier septembre. And this year, I'm very pleased to be able to welcome you to our second McGill Conference on Global Food Security. My name is Chandra Madramutu. I'm the Dean of the Faculty of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences at McGill University on the McDonald campus at St. Anne de Bellevue. And we're very pleased to be able to organize this conference once again. Last year's conference was held at the time when we saw sharp increases in food prices around the world that were never previously witnessed in such a short time period. The problem was not confined to just the developing world, although the people in many developing countries were among the most affected. We witnessed higher food prices in both Europe and North America. While commodity prices were at an all-time high, the analysis showed that high fuel prices, resultant high transportation and other input costs, as well as floods and droughts, conversion of food-producing lands for fuel production, dwindling international reserves of cereals and grains, and changing dietary patterns, particularly in India and China, also contributed to the higher food prices. The trading of food commodities on the stock markets and distorted market arrangements also played some role in driving up food prices. Lineups for food, riots, political instability, and even the toppling of government were the dramatic effects of last year's global food crisis. Countries started to scramble. Governments tried to find solutions individually. The world community, through its agencies such as the FAO, the World Bank, and the World Food Program, organized conferences, high-level consultations, and short-term emergency relief measures. But they struggled to come up with rapid solutions that could have turned around a worsening crisis affecting some 1 billion people. The Millennium Development Goal of reducing by one half the number of people affected by hunger and poverty by the year 2015 was shattered. Nonetheless, the UN Secretary General felt so strongly about the world food crisis and its impact on human and global development that he established a UN high-level task force on food security. One of the most evident and salient points emerging from last year's McGill conference was the fact that countries, both developed and developing, had been cutting back on their investments in the agricultural sector over the past 25 to 30 years. The president of the International Fund for Agricultural Development, in his keynote address at last year's conference, remarked that the food crisis was not as sudden as some may have felt. The decline in financial investments in agriculture and food production over such a long period was a warning sign, which we failed to ignore. Just as we wrapped up last year's food security conference, the world was plunged into one of its worst economic and financial crises. We are still feeling the impacts and effects to this day. The tragedy is that the financial and economic crisis has impacted on the availability of funds for investment in food production, rural infrastructure, technology transfer, marketing support services, easy access to credit by local agricultural entrepreneurs and small landholders, as well as a slowdown on the conversion of food products to biofortified and nutritious food compounds. Even more tragic is that another 100 million people at least have been plunged further into hunger, malnutrition, and poverty. It is against this backdrop that we have decided to focus this year's conference on the impacts of a global financial turmoil on food security. We have built the program on the success of last year's conference and on your call, those of you who participated last year, for McGill to continue to show leadership in the area of global food security. This year's conference, over the next few days, you will hear from experts working in countries affected by food and nutrition insecurity on what has changed in the field over the past 12 months, what has worked, what has not worked, and the lessons learned. The specific challenges around finance and credit, investments in agriculture, research and capacity building, and markets and trade will be explored. The question of food versus fuel and appropriate biofuel policies, as well as the constraints to food production as a result of a change in climate, will be debated. Quite interestingly, world leaders at the G8 summit in this past June in L'Aquila made statements and commitments on exactly the topics that we will be debating at this year's conference. It is my hope that some of the discussion, conclusion, and key points emanating from this year's conference will find their way into the documentation for next year's G8 summit to be held in Canada. We have invited leading experts on these subjects, representing a range of disciplines and organizations, as our conference speakers. The response of our invitations has been overwhelming and most gratifying. I'm indeed grateful to all our speakers and conference participants for this extremely positive response. Your presence is testimony to the fact that much remains to be done in order to overcome the problems of food and nutrition insecurity worldwide. I'm further keen to see that the outputs from this conference can shape the influence and policies of Canadian institutions and civil society involved in the decision-making around global food security. Your active participation in the debate and discussions over the next 3 days is therefore critical to framing a Canadian response to one of the most significant challenges confronting human and global development at this time in our history. I would now like to call upon one of our conference co-chairs, Mrs. Marilyn Knox, President of Nestle Nutrition Canada, to deliver some opening remarks.
Thank you. Bienvenue à Montréal. It's so good to be here. I really appreciate being invited. But from the small conversations I have had just as we've begun, it takes courage and hope and a belief that agricultural practices, food production, and nutrition can really make a fundamental difference in this very complex world we're in. So I'm humbled to have been asked to be part of this event, and I'm just going to make a few remarks and we'll get going. So this is an important conference. It's the second time it's happened. Obviously, last year gave everyone reason to believe that it was worth taking it forward and doing it again. If we think back to last October, yes, there were food riots and problems. Who would have thought what would happen in the recession that really hit us around the world? The FAO cereal index in 2008 was 322% higher than it had been in just 2000. And then the recession hit. So if we keep going, today the world continues to experience the food crisis in developing countries. Despite a drop in raw commodity costs, as Chandra had talked about, now costs of food are affected by more than that, of course, distribution, labor, and so on. But you didn't see in developing countries any kind of drop in food prices. And so 1 billion more people have been pushed further into poverty, further into hunger and malnutrition than even a year ago. So then the recession hits. And that just exacerbates the problem of poor having access to credit, to land, to water, to capital assets, and living on marginal resources, not really being able to get adequate nutrition for growth and development. As Chandra alluded to, there's some 300 million more pregnant women and children under two in 61 countries who are more at risk today than they were even a year ago. And this loss in human capital is therefore immense. However, positive change could really have an impact on babies very quickly. It gives us reason for courage and hope. One thing that became clear at last year's conference was that the food crisis had been looming on the horizon. People had been talking about it for 25 years. It needed more investment in agriculture and food production and nutrition, a fact that had been evident for so long. How will we meet the food demands of a growing global population? It would take an investment in food production that would be doubled over the next 40 years to really have that impact. And what will this investment cost? It would cost, the estimate would be, $30 billion annually to really solve this problem. And then the current global financial crisis on top of that really causes us to sit back and think this isn't just an important conference we're having, it's a fundamental conference. There are other factors at play. Drought. So drought due to changing climate in arid and semi-arid tropics. Flooding. Prolonged wet seasons that are flooding some of the humid agricultural zones. Water. Water use and its impact on the water tables around the world. It takes about a liter of water to make one calorie of food. So you just do the math. It's a huge part of the problem. Protectionism. Inability of some of the economically weaker countries to take advantage of new trading arrangements, or lack of access to some of the more sophisticated markets. Cheaper food products from developed countries that may be dumped in developing countries. It interrupts productivity and the capability of the local agricultural sector. Purchase of land resources in some African countries, for example, by foreign governments for external food production, diminishing local food security. Biofuels. Also mentioned by Chandra, the use of valuable food-producing lands to produce biofuels. Biofuels may have a role, but what it ends up happening, every action has an equal and sometimes opposite reaction, limiting local food supplies and driving up food prices artificially. These are some of the topics over the next 3 days that we will cover. We built on the success of last year's conference. I was in touch with the Right Honorable Joe Clark to ask him his advice as he chaired this conference, co-chaired last year. And he was impressed on the quality of the participants that I know is being matched this year, and also pointed out the remarkable leadership of Chandra. So this year's conference is important. It's good that McGill is being seen to be a leader in a role around technical and policy aspects of global food security. Our McGill conference over the next 3 days will be a forum for debate. It'll be an opportunity to spotlight action that will make a difference. The challenge for each of us is that we care about feeding the world, and it is fundamental to global development and stability. The work we do here will contribute to taking better care of our world together. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marilyn. This conference would not have been possible without the generosity and financial support of our many sponsors. And I'm very pleased this afternoon to recognize the sponsors of this year's conference, and you will see them listed on the various bulletin boards around. Let me publicly acknowledge the support of the Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture, IDRC, Dr. Donald McQueen Shaver, the Quebec Ministry of Agriculture and Food, Fisheries and Food, the Quebec Ministry of International Relations, the Nova Scotia Department of Agriculture, and of course McGill University. But last but not least, and specifically, I want to take this opportunity to thank a very special donor and sponsor of this year's conference. an alumna of MacDonald College, our Faculty of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences, Mrs. Erin Hogg, and she would like to say a few words. Erin, please.
Good afternoon. Madam Knox, Dean Madramutu, and distinguished guests and participants and students. I'm honored to support this important World Conference, and in so doing, wish to honor the global achievements of the great plant geneticist Nikolai Ivanovich Vavilov. Vavilov was born in 1887 in Russia, and at the age of 30, as the Russian Revolution began in 1917, he was already head of the agronomy department at Saratov University. He was promoted to director of the prestigious All-Union Institute of Agricultural Science in Leningrad in 1924. In 1935, he continued that position, as well as serving as head of the genetics laboratory in Moscow, until 1940, in spite of tremendous political upheavals during those years. The institute survived intact during the siege of Leningrad, though one of his assistants starved to death surrounded by millions of edible seeds. Starting in 1916, Vavilov made more than 100 collecting missions to major world agricultural areas, visiting five continents. He brought, for example, 31,000 specimens of wheat into his institute. Here he developed the world's largest seed gene bank, hoping to contribute to the betterment of the human condition through the reduction of famine. Working and studying with leading world scientists, he proposed 8 global centers of plant origin. Vavilov's direction was to harness the characteristics of plants through agricultural breeding. Under Stalin, his advanced science and ideas became increasingly questioned. Gradually, he fell into disfavor, as Stalin promoted the work of a more politically astute peasant, Trofim Lysenko, who discredited Mendel's and Darwin's research. In 1940, Vavilov was finally arrested, charged with treason, and imprisoned. Even from there, he petitioned to be allowed to continue his scientific work. But he was forgotten. He died of starvation in prison in 1943. His family struggled to rehabilitate his name and his work. The guilty verdict was rescinded in 1955, and since 1970s, his legacy has been restored. The Vavilov Center for Plant Industry in St. Petersburg is again a major research center into the diversity, conservation, and use of plant species, and he is now considered a world hero. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Erin, for your very kind words and also for your support, financial support for the conference. I'd now like to call on our two co-chairs for this afternoon's session, Professor Marilyn Scott, who is a professor in the Institute of Parasitology on the MacDonald campus and also director of the McGill School of Environment, and Professor John Kennelly, who is the dean of the Faculty of Agricultural, Environmental, and Environmental Sciences. He copied the MacDonald name, by the way. John and Marilyn, please, the floor is yours.